Welcome to Global Talk, an international affairs podcast from The National. I'm Justin Vella. Today is Tuesday, August 26. India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi has been in office for 100 days now. To talk about what he's accomplished, we have on the phone Samanth Subramanian, India correspondent for The National. Hi, so Modi was elected with the expectation that he would increase economic development in India and spur growth. What steps has he taken to achieve this?
Well, it's difficult to say in the first 100 days because there's really only been one budget and the sort of macroeconomic planning and restructuring of the economy that is needed to significantly improve growth, you know, takes much more than just 100 days. In the budget that his finance minister, Arun Jaitley, presented in July, there were certain steps that were definitely taken to make sure that India's fiscal losses, the fiscal deficit, was kept down to a target of 4.1%. Now, this has been a big problem for India over the last few years because government spending, to a large extent, depends upon how big its losses are, how big its deficit is. And simultaneously, also, GDP growth was targeted at 5.4 to 5.9%. Now, this is again higher than India's experience in the last 2 or 2.5 years. But more broadly, the kind of drastic renovation of the economy that Modi had promised in his campaign, which is sort of drastic steps to liberalize investment, liberalize the economic sectors like infrastructure and retail, those have not transpired as yet. And this is perhaps an indication that it's easier to campaign than to govern, or as somebody once said, you campaign in poetry, but you govern in prose. And I think this is a reflection of the fact that the day-to-day governance of India doesn't really expedite very drastic renovations of the economy. Right now, what Modi has been doing is basically been focusing on the fiscal deficit and keeping it low, focusing on inflation and trying to rein that in, and trying to slowly revive economic growth. But these are sort of, you know, these are long charges. You can touch off the charges now, but the explosion is only going to come a year down the line or so.
Okay, and Modi came to office shrouded in a bit of controversy from his time when he was the chief minister of Gujarat. Could you explain to us what that controversy was?
Sure. Modi had been chief minister of Gujarat since 2001, and in 2002, there were vicious anti-Muslim riots in the capital, in the main city of Ahmedabad, but in other towns as well. More than 1,000 people died in these riots, and they were very communal riots, as the word is used in India, Hindu groups attacking Muslim victims. There were suspicions that Modi allowed these attacks to go on without stopping them proactively. At worst, he may have even abetted them. So this stain on his record had persisted well into the campaign, into the prime ministerial campaign when he started this last year. And it reflects a little bit, draws a little bit also upon Modi's background in the RSS. This is the Rashtriya Swayamsevak Sangh, which is sort of a right-wing Hindu nationalist organization, which is sort of the ideological parent of the BJP, the Bharatiya Janata Party, which is Modi's political party.
Mm-hmm. And now that Modi is in power, he's been accused of letting the RSS take somewhat of a firm control over the BJP. Is that right?
It's difficult to say. I mean, what has actually happened is that Modi appointed probably his closest political confidant as the head of the BJP. So now Modi not only controls the government, but also indirectly controls the party. And subsequently, a number of officials, a new management team was appointed to the BJP. This included new vice presidents, new general secretaries, and a lot of these people had a very strong RSS background. Now, this is not unusual in itself. I mean, the transition from the RSS to the BJP is something that a lot of people have made before, Modi included. Modi himself grew up in the RSS, and then I think was almost seconded to the BJP in 1985. So this is not unusual in itself for the BJP, but it is telling that the RSS is sort of, the ideology that comes with the RSS is now very dominant in the BJP.
Mm-hmm. And one of the main sticking points for the RSS is, of course, Pakistan. Modi invited Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif to his inauguration, but then more recently he went to the border with Pakistan and he accused Islamabad of waging a proxy war in Kashmir. Pretty hardline rhetoric all of a sudden. Where did that come from?
Well, the RSS, you're right. I mean, the RSS's stance on Pakistan and Kashmir has traditionally been a hardline and aggressive one. And I think, but simultaneously also, we shouldn't see this as a break, we shouldn't see Modi's policy as a break in continuity from what previous governments have said. It's been long accepted within Indian foreign policy circles that the terrorists who cross the line from Pakistan into Kashmir are backed by the Pakistani government, and if the phrase proxy war has come about, you know, come up dozens of times in the past. I think what Modi must have done is sort of start his tenure with sort of a soft handshake with this invitation of Nawaz Sharif, but then subsequently, you know, also wanted to display the iron fist within the velvet glove. We should also point out that there are other factors also. I mean, there have been numerous violations of the 2003 ceasefire over the line of control, and Pakistani troops have fired into Indian soil numerous times in the past. Soldiers and civilians have both been killed. And so this is one of the many reasons over the past few weeks that have served to strengthen Modi's hand vis-a-vis his attitude towards Pakistan.
Mm-hmm. Over the long term, though, where do you see Modi pointing India's Pakistan policy? Do you see Modi as being someone that could be more compromising with Pakistan later on in his tenure?
You know, I mean, a lot of foreign policy experts have told me that as easy as it is to maybe change domestic policy when you're prime minister, it's very difficult to sort of keep chopping and changing foreign policy depending on which government is in power. And so I think what we will see probably is a continuity of foreign policy from previous governments. And in fact, one can draw a line right back to the previous BJP government in the late 90s under Atal Bihari Vajpayee. Mr. Vajpayee was also a BJP leader, and yet simultaneously he served to repair relations with Pakistan in 2003, but to a large extent. And so I think it's very difficult to be reactive or ideological or whimsical when it comes to foreign policy. And I think he'll do exactly what needs to be done, which is to sort of try to clamp down on cross-border terrorism in Kashmir, defend the line of control as previous governments have, but at the same time also look at ways to strengthen soft ties, to continue foreign secretary level peace talks and trade talks with Pakistan, and see where it all comes out. I mean, he hasn't spelled out what he thinks is the ideal solution for the Kashmir dispute as yet. A lot of other previous prime ministers had spelled out, for example, making the line of control a de facto border and so on. Modi hasn't actually committed to anything on that front. So it's difficult to tell where his thinking stands on this. But a lot of the other measures which contribute the bulk of diplomatic ties with Pakistan, I think, will continue to endure.
Another foreign policy flashpoint for India is, of course, China. What are the main points of contention between India and China, and how has Modi sought to interact with them?
Well, again, as with Pakistan, a lot of the flashpoints in China have carried over from the previous government. I mean, there are sort of territorial disputes in the north and in the northeast. And so as a result, these borders are extremely, I wouldn't say vulnerable, but they're definitely sort of inflammable if things go wrong. And we saw earlier in the term of the previous government how sort of incursions by Chinese troops had to be rebuffed. These are things that happen in the north and the northeast, and those are extremely vulnerable borders. So Modi will, I think, as with previous governments, seek to ensure that those borders are well protected, that the borders are well defined. But simultaneously, Modi is a huge student of the Chinese development model. I mean, there are sort of wonderful anecdotes about how he visited China even during his chief ministership of Gujarat, not necessarily with an entourage or a delegation, but just by himself, almost as a student, with a notebook, sort of going around trade zones and so on, just taking copious notes and ensuring that he absorbed what China has done to spur economic growth. And I think we'll see a number of economic cooperation measures initiated with China that stem from Modi's admiration of China's development model. I think Modi appreciates and understands the importance of the BRICS grouping. This is a grouping of, you know, fast developing populous nations like Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And I think he'll seek to strengthen the cooperation at that group level as well.
You've been listening to an interview with Samanth Subramanian, India correspondent for The National. To read more of Samantha's stories, visit thenational.ae.